Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Analysis of Young People in the 2016 Election Conference Call. Your host for today is Abby Kisa. Ms. Kisa, you may now begin.
Hello. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Abby Kisa, the Director of Impact with CIRCLE. As many of you know, CIRCLE is a national research center on youth civic education and civic engagement. CIRCLE stands for the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement. We focus on young people in the United States, especially those who are marginalized or disadvantaged in political life. CIRCLE's scholarly research informs policy and practice for healthier youth development and a better democracy. CIRCLE is part of the Jonathan M. Tisch College of Civic Life at Tufts University. Before we begin, I want to introduce the two other folks from Tisch College and CIRCLE who will be speaking on the call. First is our director, Dr. Kay Kawashima Ginsburg.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kay Kawashima Ginsburg, director of CIRCLE. Thank you so much for being here, and I look forward to hearing your questions later on.
And the second is our associate dean at Tisch College, Peter Levine.
Hi, everyone. Peter Levine. I also used to be director of CIRCLE for a bunch of years, so I may be able to offer a little comparison to previous years. But otherwise, I'm going to leave it to my two colleagues who do most of the talking.
Thanks, everyone. This call is going to, I'm going to begin by framing a little bit about why youth voting is important and follow up with a little bit of information about what we've seen in terms of youth vote choice in the presidential race so far this year compared to previous years. We're going to follow that up with some analysis of the presidential margin of victory by our director, followed by some preliminary analysis of youth voter turnout in 2016 by our director as well. And then Peter will conclude our conversation. There will be a Q&A at the end, so please keep your questions and write them down so you won't forget. So to start, everything that we're going to be talking about today is for young voters. And by that, we mean specifically, because of the data, 18 to 29-year-olds. As you know, there is significant overlap between youth and millennials right now. Millennials, however, reach all the way up to about 35 years of age, and today we're just talking about 18 to 29-year-olds. We'll be talking primarily about the presidential race today, but please stay tuned to CIRCLE for more analysis about down-ballot races and the relationship between presidential vote choice among youth and congressional support. So before going specifically into the 2016 data, we wanted to reiterate some of what research has shown about why youth voting is important specifically. Why is it important to talk about youth during elections? First, research has shown that voting is habit forming. So when young people learn the voting process, they are more likely to do so when they're older. We also know that there's major differences in voter turnout amongst youth subgroups, which may persist as these youth get older if the gaps are not reduced early. Second, we think that voting can form an identity in a young person as an engaged citizen, and this could be a gateway to other types of engagement in a community, in a state, or in national politics, or other settings. And then third, this year, young people make up 21% of the voting eligible population in the United States. That's 49 million young citizens age 18 to 29 years old. And this is more than there are seniors eligible to vote. So their voices make a difference, matter a great deal because they are a major subset of the electorate and their voices matter. Fourth, we have shown from 2012 and 2014 that young people's participation can influence election results, and we'll see that later on in this call, that we've seen that again this year. And then finally, the fifth reason that we want to talk about is that young people's engagement can actually influence others in their household. So when a young person is engaged in election-related learning, activities, and discussion, that can have an impact on the other people in their household and their awareness and engagement. One final note, all of the information that we're talking about today is based on the national exit poll and state exit polls conducted by Edison Research that has been accessed through news outlets and through previous exit poll databases, because we'll be trying to put as much as we can in historical analysis. And then finally, we're always thinking about equity during elections. We focus a great deal on how to close participation gaps amongst youth in various civic and political settings. And research has shown that young people's civic opportunities can differ greatly. And this connects to participation rates, such as voter turnout, which can dramatically differ by youth. What we're seeing, and which we'll report even more on next week, is that this election potentially mobilized young people who may have never thought of themselves as political actors. And we had seen signs of this when we saw that Trump supporters in our poll were significantly less likely to think that they would be involved in various forms of political engagement. So we'll know more about this next week as we dig into the exit polls and whether or not Obama's coalition of racially diverse youth really switched to a more diverse coalition, not necessarily racially, but in terms of education. So before anything goes further, I'm going to turn it over to Kay for a moment.
Oh, thanks, Abby. You know, I think I don't really have a lot of comment here, but I think, you know, I want to reiterate that, you know, to be transparent, you know, here at Circle, we're frankly a little bit surprised by the outcome, but also see this as a potential opportunity, like Abby said, about the idea of mobilizing different kinds of young people who really never really responded to the polling before the election or in our survey were saying things like they would never, ever participate in marches and rallies and all of that. And so we're potentially looking at different kinds of electorate that's made up of young people who felt marginalized in different ways than we had been thinking about, which were potentially about more sort of ethnic minority youth and immigrant youth in our previous focus. So this is an opening that I'd like to discuss with all of you. But now Abby's going to talk a little bit more about what we have found so far. Thanks, Abby.
Great. Thanks so much, Kay. So I'm going to talk a little bit about vote choice, who young people voted for in a presidential election in 2016, compare it a little bit to 2012, and talk about the general trend line of youth presidential vote choice over the years. So in yesterday's election, the national exit poll suggests that young voters, again, 18 to 29-year-olds, supported Secretary Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump by a wide margin, 55% for Secretary Clinton to 37% for Donald Trump. This 37% compares favorably to the support Governor Romney received in 2012, and this is the fourth lowest level of support for a Republican candidate since 1972. The 55% for Secretary Clinton, though it's the third highest share of the youth vote for Democrats since 1972, is less than the level of support that President Obama received in 2012, which was 60%. The difference appears at least partially attributable to young voters choosing candidates other than the two major party candidates, either Johnson or Stein, or perhaps neither, writing in another candidate. Nationally, we saw that 8% of young voters did this, voted either for Johnson, Stein, or perhaps wrote in another candidate. Young people voted drastically different, however, from older voters, a trend that some will no doubt compare to Brexit in the EU vote earlier this year. It is also something that we saw throughout the primary season, where younger Republicans tended to support Trump at lower levels than older voters in GOP contests. Throughout the election season, our analysis has emphasized a demographic and ideological heterogeneity of millennials that contradicts some facile generalizations that characterize them as the Obama generation. In particular, there are regularly stark differences in ideology, party ID, and issue positions among young people of different races, ethnicities, by gender, and by education. We'll have more about this next week, but in the meantime, we want to point out major differences among youth by race and ethnicity. This year, 43% of young white people voted for Secretary Clinton, while black youth supported her by almost double that margin at 83%. However, it is worth noting that young African Americans were notably less likely to support Clinton in 2016 at 83% than Obama in 2012 at 91%. What we see from the national exit poll is also that 70% of young Latinos voted for Clinton. So that's the short of what we're seeing on the national level for youth support. Some similar trends to what we have been seeing, as well as some media among young people. And now I'm going to turn it over to Kay to talk about the margin of victory analysis.
Thanks, Abby, for the analysis. And yeah, thank you so much for the opportunity. So I don't know how many of you have seen us talk about how young people had an impact in 2012 presidential election and to a lesser extent in 2014 midterm by talking about how young people's choice was very different from those of older voters. And they showed up in a pretty good number and also played a key role in battleground states. We repeated this analysis in 2016, and just to take a step back, how we do that is to make a hypothetical assumption about the youth vote being more evenly split between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. In almost all cases where we're looking at the states to watch youth vote choices, young people mostly supported Hillary Clinton over Donald Trump, though there are a few exceptions. By shifting the number of votes cast, hypothetically, once again, between those two candidates evenly, we are able to then project what the outcome would have been had young people made more even-keeled choices. So that's what we do. And what we found is that, the once again, young people did play key role in some battleground races that are still being called, that are being too close to call, and in Nevada where Hillary Clinton actually won. Young people's role was really important because those races were incredibly close and young voters gave the boost that she needed in order to stay in the race or win the race outright. So we'll talk about three different states as illustrative examples here. First is in Nevada where Hillary Clinton did win by about 26,000 votes, at least that's the number we have so far. And young people decisively favored Hillary Clinton in Nevada with a margin of almost 20 points, or over 20 points, 54% for her and 32% for Donald Trump. And this resulted in a net gain for her of 23,000 votes. What that means is that she got 23,000 in favor of herself from young voters alone. If young voters actually split their choice evenly between those two candidates, she would have had a razor thin margin of just 3,000 votes, certainly enough to provoke a recount in the state. In Michigan, which still has not been called as far as I know so far, young voters' decisive support has also played a major role in keeping that race that close and still to be called. Currently, Donald Trump is leading Hillary Clinton by just about 15,000 votes. But young people favored Hillary Clinton by almost 230,000 votes. So that's many, many, many times more of the current margin of difference between those two. 57% of young voters voted for Hillary Clinton and 34% for Donald Trump. Again, really big margin here. If young voters' support for her was even slightly less decisive, Donald Trump would have handily won the state already. In New Hampshire, where the vote is also still too close to call, with just about 1,500 votes separating Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, young voters have so far given the boost she really needed to come out ahead of Donald Trump and Trump in this slightly very, very contested race. So young voters gave Clinton a net of 12,000 votes in her favor by supporting her 49% to 41% in that state. And if young people had, again, split the votes evenly between the two candidates, she would have been losing by almost 5,000 votes right now. In New Hampshire, also important to note that young voters were the only age group that gave her a significant edge among all the age group, where other age groups are either completely split in half or slightly favoring Clinton. So that's our margin of victory analysis. And again, it tells really the story about how important it is to invite young people to participate, to have a voice, even when they don't necessarily think they're important. Michigan is a good example where, you know, a lot of us didn't think Michigan would be a battleground state, or at least not a toss-up anymore. And yet, here we are this morning still looking at Michigan. and young voters really matter there. Now, I'm going to move on to a very brief discussion about the estimated youth voter turnout figure. And again, as Abby noted, this is based on the exit poll analysis of the national exit poll showing that the 19% of all votes cast are votes by young people. And based on that number, we estimate the number of votes cast by youth and then estimate the youth turnout, which is the percent of young people out of all eligible citizens of that age group who voted. Okay? Based on that, we currently have an estimate of 50% among young people as turnout estimate. That's very, very similar to what we had in 2012 at this time. And that translates to an estimated 23 to 24 million young voters. Again, by estimation of the youth vote choice, that means about 13 million young people came out to vote for Secretary Clinton, and almost 9 million young people voted for Mr. Donald Trump. An additional 2 million young people either voted for third-party candidates or chose not to vote for anybody on that ballot. So that's what we have so far in terms of turnout. Peter, would you like to have a closing comment on what we have found so far and then take on some questions after that? Are you muted?
I'm sorry, I muted myself. I was talking. I think we should go straight to questions, though, because you guys did a great job and let out a lot of information. And I'll just see if any questions are maybe best handled by me. Thanks.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Again, if you have any questions, please press star 1 at this time. And we're waiting for callers to join the queue. Our first question comes from Emma with iCivics. Emma, please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for this. I was wondering what implications the youth vote in this race has on the case we make for civic education. So put another way, a lot of us are constantly pushing for more and better civic education, and we're wondering how the youth vote in this election can help us to better make that case.
So I can go first, Emma. Thank you so much. This is Kay. And I think, you know, this is a potentially a really difficult election for especially the school-age youth who are incredibly diverse racially and also from their family origin. Many of them are immigrant family kids. And that gives both a challenge and opportunity in having a solid and reflective conversations about what this new generation can do in both civic education, but also in their community as people to people. Our pre-election poll really suggested that there was a big, deep cliff between young people of different racial backgrounds and educational backgrounds. And that was in some ways contrary to what many people believed as the generational identity of millennials, where many millennials themselves would often say we're the progressive generation. But it revealed that many young people didn't feel the same way as liberal millennials. And again, it really unearthed how diverse this generation is. So this is an opportunity to really embrace that diversity and not look away from the fact that there were disagreements amongst this generation. It's also really important then to make sure we support the teachers, administrators, and parents and community members to be able to have these conversations with our young people.
This is Peter. I guess I might just add, it's of course too early to tell the effects of civic education on the 2016 election. It just happened yesterday. But we know from considerable body of research from previous elections that young people who study civics in school in a way that's engaging and particularly based on discussion and addressing current controversial issues and talking explicitly about voting, vote at a higher rate and also show more knowledge of the current events issues. So it's not really a reflection on the statistics that have been presented today, because that would be true whatever they were. But an election is a moment to say, are we doing a good job of educating our kids? Because when they vote, they'll be more, when there's an opportunity to vote, they'll be more likely to vote, and they'll be more likely to vote in an informed way if they have experienced civic education.
Okay, our next question comes from Noah with Youth Radio. Noah, please go ahead.
Thank you. I'm not expecting necessarily an answer, but are we going to be looking at crosstabs on the racial breakdown versus the economic breakdown of the youth vote and get some of that as well in the regions?
Abby, would you like to take that?
Sure, absolutely. Noah, thanks so much for joining us. We're huge Youth Radio fans. Not to fangirl out, but thanks so much for what you guys do. We are.
Well, we rely on you, so there you go.
We'll provide crosstabs and more information by race and ethnicity among youth. That's a good question about whether or not we can break that down by region. Once we look more closely at the data, we'll see whether or not the sample sizes can hold to allow for both looking at region and race. I think that that's an open question right now. When it comes to kind of economics, one of the things that we generally do is look at education sort of as a proxy, just in case young people aren't, you know, aware of, you know, their household situation and household income to be able to report on it. And so we will absolutely be reporting out on education. If you have very specific questions about that, then don't hesitate to email us and we'd be happy to, you know, try to look into it as much as we can.
Our next question comes from John with CNN. John, please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you all for doing this call. I'm interested in the turnout side of things, and I wonder if you have any numbers to compare, like the turnout among young people to older generations. I think that, you know, the conventional wisdom is that millennials and younger voters vote in much lower percentages than older voters do.
Thanks, John, and it's very good to hear from you. And, you know, it's been a conventional wisdom, and it's factually backed that the young people do vote at a lower rate than older generation at any given point. But that's actually been the consistent trend since boomers were young. So when the boomers were young, they voted at about the same rate as millennials. So that trend hasn't been really changing. So that's a misconception to think that millennials are especially unlikely to vote as young people compared to boomers. If anybody was voting at the lower rate slightly, that would be Gen Xers. That said, you know, this election, we haven't really seen the specific estimate on how the overall electorate turnout has been. But given the fact that young people's share held at the same rate at the 19% compared to 2012, and our estimates suggest that turnout actually hasn't gone down, as opposed to what many people were worried about before the election. We did receive a lot of questions about that. So that's all we know so far. My coworkers may know more. Does anybody have more?
Our next question comes from Jennifer with Herald Mill. Jennifer, please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Actually, I was looking for clarification on one thing. I missed the number that Kay shared. It was involving the percentage of voters you estimate that cast votes for Secretary Clinton in Michigan. And
sure.
Then I had a question whether you had any analysis for Pennsylvania.
Yes, and I can sort of try to read off of that. So for Michigan, the voter choice among youth was 57%. To Mrs. Clinton and 34% to Mr. Trump. So that's that. And then we did look at Pennsylvania, so let me look at that. And there, you know, Secretary Donald Trump did end up winning late last night, so let me look at the number here. So as far as what we have so far is this. So we have an overall difference among youth of 52% going to Clinton and 43% to Trump. So again, young people supported Mrs. Clinton, but not the same kind of margin as Michigan youth did, for example. By that, young voters gave Secretary Clinton a net gain of 86,000 or so votes, so that's a simple difference in estimation of number of votes. The overall margin of victory in the state looks like was 68,000 overall. Does that sound about right? That's what I'm finding right now. was that if young people had split the votes half and half, what would have happened is that the Donald Trump, who won by relatively slim margin, would have won with over 100,000 votes difference between the two. So that is an example where when young people give slightly less decisive support, young people, you know, end up making less of an impact in the state. Oftentimes, young people vote in the opposite direction of the older voters, and that's the case here. But the difference between the Clinton vote and Trump vote wasn't as big as, say, in Michigan, like I said, where we saw almost 200,000 votes difference. Here in Pennsylvania, we saw about 85,000, 86,000. So that can make a big difference.
Our next question comes from Alan with Youth Today Juvenile Justice Information. Alan, please go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for fielding my question. I was wondering what you believe that these results mean moving forward in future elections as the youth age and the older generations won't be voting.
You want to comment, Peter?
Sure. One thing that's already been mentioned is that voting itself is habit forming. So the young people who voted yesterday are more likely to vote in subsequent elections. There's less evidence about whether they might change their vote, switch party, for example. The old conventional wisdom decades ago was that if they voted a couple times for one party, then they were in the party for life. But I think that's probably less true. Parties function differently today, and I'm not sure party loyalty is the same kind of thing. Anyway, a lot more young people choose to identify as independents, even if they vote with one party or the other. So you would expect this, those who voted, those who came out today, to be more likely to vote in the next election, but with possibly switching their vote. And of course, in any case, there's always change. So there would be a bunch of, for example, young people who happened not to vote in yesterday's election who will turn out 4 years from now. One way to look at it is that we've seen change in recent elections. So the youth electorate was different in 2008 from what it was in 2000 by quite a bit. It was in 2008 it went way over to Obama, and it was a pretty strong turnout year. In 2000 it was very close and not a very good turnout year. So one election doesn't predict the next because the years change and also the youth change a bit because a whole new cohort, a whole new year worth of young people come on board with each year. But certainly that those people who voted yesterday would be more likely to vote in the future. I wonder if either Abby or Kay want to build on what I just said.
I think maybe just one sentence. I think one of the things to watch is the potential of young, you know, in particular, potentially white men who were actually less engaged in elections in general in the past data we've seen. Women were the ones that were really highly mobilized in presidential elections, although young men certainly discuss politics. So if this was an election where young men, particularly white, middle class, or working class men, decided this was their time to become politically engaged, this could really change how they view themselves politically, because for the first time, perhaps, in their adult life, they've really had significant clout and voice, but they hadn't realized that. So when we looked at a pre-election survey data of Trump supporters, we were noticing that they were not the types that usually are seen in political rallies, in volunteering organizations, and making phone calls for candidates. They were just sort of not very engaged group. So if we can change how they view themselves politically and civically, you know, as we said earlier, this made a difference in how we think about equity and political participation.
Our next question comes from Michael with Education Writers Association. Michael, please go ahead.
I missed the first 5 or 6 minutes of this call, and thank you for doing this call. Are you able to go over once more the racial breakdowns? And if you can, racial and gender. So you just talked about white men. And so the white men share for Trump, white men share for Clinton, and onward.
Thanks, Michael. This is Abby from Circle. And one of the things that might be a resource is that we put all of this data up at civicheath.org. It should be on the top of our blog roll right now. So if you need to reference it again, feel free to go there as well. So we actually don't have age data by gender at this point. We will next week, so please stay tuned to our website and our list for that. We do know, however, what happened between young people by race. So this year, young white people supported Clinton at a rate of 43%. Young black people supported her at almost double that margin at 83%, and 70% of young Latinos supported Clinton. Young white people were more likely to support Trump than they were Secretary Clinton, 48% to 43%. We did see some gender differences in our pre-election poll among whites, so that's one thing we will be looking at in the further exit poll data when we gain access to it.
Our next question comes from Dave with WNBR Radio. Dave, please go ahead.
I'm wondering whether or not you have any data on youth with parents or siblings who are undocumented immigrants, and if so, is it your assessment that those young kids were more motivated to vote in this particular election because of the rhetoric?
That's a really interesting question. Unfortunately, we do not have any data on that. Abby may have heard from folks that are working directly with young people, but I certainly don't have specific numbers on that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we could definitely help you connect to stories on the ground, but the exit poll data doesn't facilitate that sort of analysis at this point, unfortunately.
Our next question comes from Jonquilin with NPR. Jonquilin, please go ahead.
Hi. I may have misheard you at the beginning of the call, but it sounded like you said that everything comes down to 29-year-olds. Could you talk about that a little bit?
I may have accidentally misspoke. so maybe you can tell me what you thought you heard. Sorry about that. I think I was trying to clarify that this data is for 18 to 29-year-olds. Kay did present three states where the results really seem to rest on 18 to 29-year-olds in Nevada, Michigan, and third state. And so she can repeat that if that would be helpful.
I think the other thing may be that we were drawing a distinction between 18 to 29-year-olds, who are how we define youth for this purpose, mainly because that's what the exit poll does, and then millennials, who go further up to about age 35 these days.
Exactly.
Does that help?
Thanks, Peter.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 at this time. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. And we're waiting for callers to join the queue. We have another question from Michael with Education Writers Association. Michael, please go ahead.
Hey, earlier at the top of the call, you share data on how Obama garnered more support among certain 18 to 29-year-olds. What were the numbers for Latino support for Obama in 08 and 12? I know that Hillary this year got 70%, but were those numbers higher for Obama?
So I have the 2012 numbers in front of me right now, and that was 74%. For Obama in 2012, and again, it was 70% in 2016. I can look around for 2008, unless Abby already has that.
I don't have it in front of me, but I can pull it up pretty quickly. Well, hopefully pretty quickly. Sorry, I guess not very quickly. I'm almost there. So among young Latinos in 2008, we saw support for the Democratic candidate, then Senator Obama, at 76% and 19% support for Senator McCain.
So the trend is 76 to 72 to 70, is that correct?
76, 74, 70.
I'm sorry, yes. Thank you.
Yep.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you have a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Again, if you have any more questions, please press star 1 at this time. Our next question comes from Jennifer with Herald Mail. Jennifer, please go ahead.
Ask whether you are aware of any surveys or polling that was done with the young voters to ask them what issues were bringing them out to cast ballots.
Thank you for the question. That's actually a question that is an exit poll. It's not a, you know, very detailed view of exactly, you know, in detail what they want, but the questions are around more priorities like immigration, I think jobs, and security. So it's in four categories. It's pretty big categories, but then they are asked about that. Unfortunately, until we get access to the youth-specific data from the national poll, we won't have that access. So far, we have a general breakdown between foreign policy, immigration, economy, and terrorism. Those are the issue priorities that they were asked about.
We have another question from Noah with Youth Radio. Noah, please go ahead.
Since we broke down the Latino vote that way, I wonder if we could get the trend line on white, African-American, and the we haven't talked about at all, Asian-American voters, the youth.
I mean, do you still have the 2008 numbers there?
Yeah, absolutely. So for young African-Americans in 2008, and we saw 95% support the Democratic presidential candidate. In 2012, it was 91%. And then I believe this year it was 83% for the Democratic candidate. Among young whites, we saw in 2012, 54% support for the Democratic candidate, 44% for the Republican candidate. In 2012, 51% for the Republican candidate, 45% for the Democratic candidate. And then in 2016, 48% for the Republican candidate, 43% for the Democratic candidate. So for young whites, the trend has differed a little bit. It went slightly more support for the Democratic candidate in 2008, slightly more support for the Republican candidate in 2012, and again in 2016, very slightly more support for the Republican candidate, 5 points more in 2016.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. And we're waiting for callers to join the queue. There are no questions in queue at this time.
Thank you so much, Natasha, and thank you all for joining us today. Please stay tuned to the Circle website for more analysis coming from us about young people in the presidential race as well as relationship to down ballot races. I'm going to pass it over to Peter for our closing.
Got to stop muting myself. I think I'll just thank everybody for the questions and just reinforce that we are available to go in deeper on all kinds of questions, both now when we would have only the exit polls, but we would have our experience with past elections to draw on, or over the next week as we'll get continued additional information. So looking forward to talking to anybody who has questions for us.
Thanks so much, everyone.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes your call. You may all disconnect at this time.